Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
The stock market, Dow Jones Industrial Average, just hit 30,000, which is the highest in history.
Making sure we selected a cabinet that looks like America.
For the first time ever, the United States will have a full-time climate leader.
I look forward to getting to work.
It looked like the Miss Globalist pageant. That you showed in the clip there with everybody ready to basically ship our jobs back offshore.
Well, there's Peter Navarro lamenting the fact that Joe Biden appears to be picking a cabinet that is just going to be full of corporate cronies and globalists. I mean, you know, his Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, right? Winking, blinking, and nod.
Sure.
Has endorsed all of the previous wars, you know, the endless wars, the endless foreign intervention. So who knows where it's going to go? We're going to be following it. I'm in for Mark Cox. Who am I? I'm Randy Tolbert. There's Carl, the intern, and Hello. Brian doing the news, and Shaylin taking your phone calls. 314-241-9797, 866-455-9797. Erica Komisar is going to, we're going to have an interview with her coming up here after the bottom of the hour. And she had a lot of interesting things to say in an article in the Wall Street Journal about some silver lining in the cloud of school closings and remote learning for kids, how they're connecting with their parents. And so we decided to talk with her, and you'll hear from her a little bit later in the hour. So it's not all bleak news. And in this Thanksgiving time, we need to try to find some happiness in the darkness. It's not all dark. I just am really fretting and hand-wringing and staring at the ceiling and just so worried about our small business owners, so many of whom support this station, support our incomes. And I don't mean as broadcasters. I mean yours and mine by giving us jobs. And if we have maybe we supply a small business, we may work for them. It's so interconnected, the matrix and the wonderful web of commerce. And when you shut things down irresponsibly, as people like Sam Page have done, it's a problem. Now, on the same token, those of you out there who are reckless and think that masks do nothing, I'm sorry, I think you're a bit reckless. And I mean, think it through. Masks do reduce. They don't prevent 100%. Nothing does. They do reduce the risk of you transmitting virus unknowingly to someone else. And so if you get a critical mass, meaning most of a community that's doing that, it's going to radically change things. And so why don't we just sort of self-comply and self-regulate rather than having to fight battles with a government that clumsily regulates us? That used to be the American way, right? And you know, we talked earlier with Charmaine Yost about we've lost God and religion and faith in a higher being as a driving force in our culture in this country. The founding fathers recognized it. I mean, Thomas Jefferson recognized a wall between government and religion. That didn't mean that he decried religion in the square. It's just that the government wasn't going to endorse or force one or another religion. So it's again, those mutual respect type of virtues and values that obviously those on the left rioting in the streets had no respect for innocent business owners, no respect for police officers trying to keep the peace, no respect for people who had nothing to do with slave ownership, 200 years ago or 150 years ago, but yet somehow because of the color of some people's skin were disdained by others. Reckless disregard and respect for others. And that's, unless we restore that to our culture, we're going to be in big trouble. Sergeant Major, is he still on the line? Let's talk to Sergeant Major. How you doing,
I'm
sir?
I'm here.
What's on your mind?
Oh, did you happen to notice that they had an interview with the, I believe it was the Secretary of State of Georgia, and what I heard from them is they cannot identify mail-in ballots with signatures after they're opened. Why in the world would you flaw your voting system that way?
I don't know. I am so confused and bewildered over the abject absurdity of some of the voting rules this season and this election year. It was just amazing. And of course, it varies from state to state. It's an interesting political discussion, isn't it, Sergeant Major? When we live in a constitutional republic and federalism rules and we elections are taken under the auspices of state governments and then delegated further to local jurisdictions. And there's some on the right and the left crying for national standards. I'm beginning to wonder
absolutely.
If we shouldn't have some national. Look, the one national standard that I think ought to be enshrined in law, maybe we need a constitutional amendment, is that you have to show affirmative, positive, undeniable ID to vote. You have to show evidence of being a citizen of this of these United States.
The socialists wouldn't agree to that. They won't agree to that. You know that.
Yeah, I know. Look, the fraud of this election happened when they started sending out ballots to voters lists that weren't accurate. The abuse of the political system and the electoral system we have was embodied in sending ballots that were too easy for people to execute. Yes, it's a right, but it's also a privilege. And those two things
correct.
Are inextricably linked. And unless one is engaged in the thought process, look, if you're a liberal, if you're a flaming socialist, but in the process and you just have a different opinion of mine, I thoroughly applaud your right to cast a ballot that differs in mine. But if you normally don't vote, you get your news from CNN or for that matter Fox, and you don't look at anything except what you heard that morning, and that determines your vote and who's going to forgive your debt or who's going to do something for you, and you don't really think things through, boy, it troubles me. And that's where I think our constitutional republic is in big trouble, when people don't calibrate and don't cognitively measure their vote and how they're going to vote. But that's just me. We got to go to a break. I don't want to go to a break, but Carl, the intern's making me, and I guess Mark will not like it if I don't go to a break. So we're going to go to a break, come back, and talk with you more. Stay tuned. More on the Mark Cox in the Morning Show. I'm Randy Tolbert.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. Randy Tobler in for Mark this morning. Happy Thanksgiving, just a day early, but I think we're all getting in that spirit, even though it's going to be a little different format this year for many, if not all of us. Make sure that you do keep the reason for the season in mind. And all is not darkness, right? There's hope. There's therapeutics. There are some very good things happening in terms of the treatment, both of early disease and preventing it from progressing to severe disease and treating severe disease. And we can all do our part. from here on in, until we get vaccines, until we, you know, get on top of the actual spread of the virus, to reduce the spread of the virus and mitigate it. Common sense rules. Let's talk to Al. Are you on line one? Wherever you are, Al, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mark. Dr. Tobler, hi.
Hey, how you doing, Al? Long time no talk.
All right. Been a while since we've talked. Hey, so my question was, what's safer, eating at home with your loved ones Thanksgiving or going out to a bar and eating and drinking? Which safer?
Depends. I'm glad you asked that. Boy, I would have thought you were a plant for what I wanted to say, Al. Actually, I know where you're going with that.
You don't know where I'm going with that. Go ahead.
I think that was a rhetorical question, right? Because you were implying that it's safer to be at home with your loved ones than to be at a bar. The problem is, like sexually transmitted diseases, this is a socially transmitted disease, and you are congregating with whoever your congregants have congregated with, which is why if you're, depending on how you define your loved ones, if they come from Chicago and, the county I live in and work in, where we're the second or third highest positivity rate, and they all descend and congregate with their loved ones, grandma and mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, however the relationship is, and they're bringing potential COVID infectiousness into the house, that's no different than being at a bar. You're essentially functionally doing the same thing. That's my point.
I always tell my patient,
you're sleeping with whoever you slept with, okay? And it's the same way with this disease.
I understand that, but my point is, besides the point you seem to think I was making, is so if it's no safer at home than it is at a bar, why are people socially distancing at home this holiday season? Why are they gathering in smaller numbers in their own home, for God's sake?
Well, I'd like to think that they're being common sense about it and they're being prudent, you know?
Are they being common sense when they clamor to get the bars and the restaurants back open so they can practice some common sense amongst people that come from different places?
If you're a young person and you attend a bar or a place where there are predominantly, if not all, young people that tend to go there, and you know how those hangouts are, they develop a culture of their own and they tend to have, I think you're at much less risk of getting one another in trouble or getting sick. Not that young people don't get sick, but they get sick from influenza too.
Young people are not the only ones going to bars and restaurants. In fact,
what I'm trying to say is, I think Aretha Franklin had it right. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. We need to have respect for the virus, not fear, and we need to have respect for one another. So I agree with that completely. If my children want to gather at our farm and hang out, and they're all young people, young, healthy people, and they're all, involved in commerce and their daily lives, and there's some small risk of them infecting one another if they're not already infected, I don't have as big a problem with that as if then they want to congregate and not socially distance around me because I'm at a little higher risk, for instance, just to bring it down to a granular level. So similarly, a lot of bars and restaurants have invested an awful lot for, indoor partitions, and they've gone to the nines to try to protect people. People do have choice, and you can be common sense and still make it happen. If Al and his wife want to go to a restaurant and sit at a table and have a dinner and they're separated by partitions and the servers are wearing a mask, and, I think that's actually a reasonable risk. That's not an unreasonable risk. It's not without risk, but it's not unreasonable.
Sure, and bars don't have partitions up where people are drinking, and we know when people drink, they relax, and they tend to socially gather rather than distance themselves.
Mm-hmm. And your point is?
Well, my point is that's a super spreader event. If you're drinking and you're letting your guards down, you're not practicing social distancing. You're gathering
In one study, and I don't know, I haven't been in the bars to see if they have partitions between the stools. I don't know. One thing I wouldn't do is uh, share the share the peanuts in the bowl. No, I know they're not doing that anymore. Yeah. But I know I think the study was done in New York City. It was a look back study. It was a large metropolitan area, and they could really only document that 3% of transmissions occurred, in bars and restaurants. So somehow these places are being demonized, and I just don't think that they need to be demonized to that point. If they're reducing their capacity, if they're effectively socially distancing, and if you're dining with those in your own sphere with whom you live inside your house, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, is it no risk? No, but it's certainly reducing risk. And we can't look at this in a black and white, good, bad, effective, ineffective. It's risk reduction. That's the way we need to think about these things. Hey, Al, good talking to you. We got to run. We'll be back. Erica Komisar, other side of the break. Mark Cox Morning Show.
Mostly cloudy, 40 degrees Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, partly sunny, 55. This is 97.1 FM Talk, Chief Meteorologist Dave Murray.
I'm Jennifer Kishinka with Your Money Now. Rite Aid says it will start charging $115 per COVID-19 test in December following the end of federal funding for diagnostic testing by the Department of Health and Human Services. The drugstore chain said it will offer testing for individuals age 13 and older, regardless of whether they are symptomatic or asymptomatic. The company is further planning to expand testing by adding another 1,000 drive-through locations. Rite Aid currently has 301 testing sites across 15 states. Twitter says it will relaunch its verification process early next year, along with brand new guidelines for users seeking out that small blue badge. The accounts that will likely be eligible for verification would include government accounts, companies, brands, nonprofits, news media accounts, entertainment, sports, activists, organizers, and what Twitter refers to as other influential individuals. Crude oil up 62 cents at $45.53 a barrel. On Wall Street, futures this morning are mixed. That's Your Money Now.
Your Money Matters, brought to you by Fisher Window and Door Store, your dealer for Marvin Windows and Doors in the St. Louis region. FisherWindow.com.
Traffic from the Ambassador Midwest Floor Traffic Center.
This report brought to you by Chuck's Boots. And we've got a little bit of a slowdown up north. Westbound 270 through the construction zone. Looks like the right lane is down today at Washington Elizabeth. But no serious delays. If you're just headed out, no delays on the Poplar Street Bridge. We did have a...
Welcome back to the program, and we are so pleased that Erica Komisar, who is so busy writing in the Wall Street Journal, counseling parents, and through this whole mess that we call the COVID nightmare, she joins us once again. And thank you for spending a little time with us, Erica.
Thank you for having me, Randy.
So your latest piece in the Wall Street Journal, entitled Lockdowns Have a Bright Side for Teens, really caught my attention because I had just seen, probably the night before, a report where the reporter was hand-wringing about how, 25%, it was an astounding number, I don't remember the number, had considered suicide in the past 30 days. And yet you're talking about a bright side, which is frankly a breath of fresh air because there's so much darkness in these days. Tell me what the good news is. I think a lot of us would like to hear a little good news.
Well, it was based on a study that was just done for the Institute for Family Studies, and it was over 1,500 adolescents were part of this study, and what it showed is that, as you would expect, teenagers are very unhappy. They are very unhappy. They are very dissatisfied with their lives. But there's the actual clinical depression numbers went down during COVID, and then they calculated why that was in this study. And the two reasons I thought were worth writing a piece so parents could really understand that unhappiness is not necessarily clinical depression. And the suicide numbers in adolescents have been very high. So to be clear, the depression and anxiety rates in adolescents are still very high, but there was a dip down during COVID, has been a dip down during COVID, for two reasons they found. One was that kids are around their parents more. They're spending more time around their parents, so therefore their parents can help them with their distress, when usually parents weren't around or kids didn't allow their parents to help them with distress. And then the second reason is they're getting more sleep. So two really good reasons that adolescents are still really unhappy during COVID, as we all are, but actually are doing better in terms of less clinical depression.
That's interesting. I'm glad you helped unpack that a little bit, because I think many of us think about, well, if you're, I mean, depression means you're not happy, but yet you can be unhappy and not be as depressed. I mean, that's what the study said, right? They may be unhappy, but they're not clinically depressed. So is that just a clinical distinction, or is that is it something different?
It's a very important distinction. And I think it's a distinction that as a society we don't make, because there's such an emphasis on being happy all the time. Mm-hmm. We can't be happy all the time, and kids and adolescents certainly can't be happy all the time, because adolescence is an emotional roller coaster based on hormones and also experiences that they're going through. So, you know, you'd say you can't be happy all the time. But if the expectation is that you should be happy all the time, then what's happening is as soon as your child is unhappy, then parents want to medicate your child. As soon as the grades dip to B's or B minuses, they want to get them on ADHD medication. The idea is to be happy and high functioning at all moments. And as human beings, we have we fluctuate. We fluctuate in terms of our mood. So unhappiness is part of the human experience, and particularly if the experience warrants it. I mean, we're going through a really challenging time, and kids aren't allowed to be with their friends. And so, of course, they're going to be unhappy. But that's not clinical depression.
Okay, well, that's good to so if parents are feeling their kids saying to them, well, yeah, I'm really angry. I'm not happy because I'm not allowed to, playing my extracurricular sports or the band concerts aren't happening, you know, whatever it is that kids are engaged in. That doesn't necessarily mean that they need to go and see a psychiatrist or a psychoanalyst like you are for a depression screening, right? I mean, there's other things to look for.
There are symptoms of depression that you need to look for. And, you know, as you know, being a doctor, that there are certain things like changes in behavior, radical drop in grades, sleep issues, eating issues. You know, there are certain things that we look for as clinicians that are signs of depression. But unhappiness would not necessarily be a sign of depression. However, let me say that talking to a therapist is not just about being depressed. You can be unhappy and still want to talk to a therapist as an adolescent. So what I say is that sometimes it helps for teenagers to talk to an adult outside of their parents, because it's hard to talk to their parents about some of these issues. So, you know, we say that teenagers are separating at this period. They're trying to push away from their parents. So at a time that they're trying to push away, they may share some things with you, and they may want to share some things with an objective therapist. So your teenager doesn't need to be depressed to get therapy. But there is a distinction between unhappiness and clinical depression.
Well, I'm hearing a real pearl there. And folks, again, we're talking with Erica Komisar. That's K-O-M-I-S-A-R. And Erica is a home parenting coach. She's a psychoanalyst, does workshops, and writes frequently in the Wall Street Journals, and is author of a book that I would recommend for any new-to-be mom or new mom or someone that's coaching a new mom, Being There, Why Prioritizing Motherhood in the First 3 Years Matters. And Being There, I think, is one of the things that you said about the COVID-19 that's a bright spot that's leading to less depression, clinical depression in our kids, the parents just being there and being present. And that may, if they do that right, I would think implicit in that would be if they're listening and being good listeners, they might get that hint that the kid may want to talk not to them about the deep, dark secrets that they want to talk about, but that may be a cue like, hey, would you like to talk to someone else that it's not so close? And that would be the trigger to maybe get that counseling. Would that be a good opportunity?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because I know when we were raising with our first child, you know, I wish they came with an instruction book. We got a little better as we went along. But I always, being a guy especially, I always wanted to solve the problem. Well, okay, you're having a problem. You're having a problem here in school, or you don't like the coach or whatever. Well, let's fix the problem. And finally, we did see a counselor, you know, because we weren't getting along like I expected. And, you know, that was, I think he was channeling Erica, because he said to us, just listen, just be there. So that's an important thing that parents can offer the kids now, is to, because there certainly is anxiety and it's disrupted their world as they know it, and they're social animals, and now that's been ripped from them in many cases. So what are some conversation starters for parents that maybe are doing this for the first time or aren't comfortable with just listening and, quote, being there?
Well, I mean, I think what you just said is gold. The idea that, you know, as parents, we think our role is always to problem solve for our children. But in fact, what they really need is they need you to be there and listen to their distress and be reflective of their emotions and not try to move them away from their sadness or anger. Be able to be what I call a container for their emotions. So, you know, teenagers have a lot of feelings. They can get very sad, and the feelings are very intense. They can get very sad. They can get very angry. They can get very happy because the regulation is not quite there. The part of their brain that helps to regulate emotion is not quite fully developed. So, you know, it's really being able to listen to them and help them to process it, but that doesn't mean problem solving. It means being a really good listener. And that's hard for parents because they want to fix it. So the role of a parent for a teenager is not necessarily to fix it unless they ask you to help them to fix it. It's just to listen.
Okay, that sounds like a good rule, folks out there who want to solve problems. Just tie your lips behind your back for a while. Just listen. Erica Komisar, K-O-M-I-S-A-R, Komisar.com. Hey, I want to thank the entire Mark Cox Morning Show crew for making me feel at home today as I sit in for Mark. We hope Mark is enjoying his restful week here. And he'll be back, of course, on Monday with lots more exciting stuff, because it is exciting. And as Biden rolls out his cabinet, I'm sure Mark will have a lot to say about it. It appears to be Obama-Biden version 2.0, right? Just a third term. All of these people are veterans of the Obama administration, and we feel a lot of rollback of the Trump advances coming on. But we need to be vocal and vigorous and but not repugnant in our opposition to the rollbacks, right? Need to be strident, but not repugnant. 314-241-9797, 866-455-9797. Hey, I did want to comment. There's a great article in the Wall Street Journal. A associate professor at the Dave Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA writes about the importance of early treatment. And this is in the context of a study out today showing hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc very effective in retarding or reducing the incidence of progression from mild outpatient, hey, I've got a little shortness of breath, a fever, COVID, you know, mild stuff that normally would be sent home and wait for it to get severe. And in those kind of people, they were radically reduced the incidence of progression to hospitalization and more severe disease. And I think that this portends and is a harbinger of the future of COVID treatment, which is early outpatient treatment to prevent overwhelming inpatient admissions and just overwhelming and crushing the medical system, which we're close to in St. Louis and outstate Missouri, all throughout Missouri. It's really, really getting to be very, very critical. Staffing shortages everywhere. There's some emergency youth authorization of medicines, other treatments that are being touted. Who knows what's going to be, quote, the most effective? Probably a series of things will be effective in reducing progression. News out of the Wash U School of Medicine, my alma mater, fluvoxamine, Luvox is the trade name. It's an antidepressant, was used and in a small study, but a good study. And it was repurposed for patients with coronavirus infection. They had mild to moderate disease that were recovering in their homes. They used remote monitoring, which is an interesting use of technology, sort of like a home observation unit, if you will, with remote monitoring that then was able to, I guess, modem into or wirelessly transmit blood pressure, temperature, fingertip oxygen sensor material or information to the researchers at Wash U. And the subjects took the antidepressant drug or placebo, so it was a randomized study, for 2 weeks. And it turns out that it was fascinating. That the news was very, very good and showed that there was radical, radical prevention of progression to disease. After 15 days, none of the 80 patients who had received the drug, Luvox, experienced serious clinical deterioration while 6 of the 72 patients given the placebo, that's about 8%, became seriously ill, 4 of whom required hospitalization. This was published actually online in the November 12th Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA. So some serious work being done there at WashU, and I know you've heard Ken Remy on Mark's show here, and he'll be on with me. I'm going to do Annie's show for her on Friday, so we'll have Ken on then as well. He's had a viral Facebook post that's quite dramatic. Basically, he's masked and he's goggled, and he says, this is what the end of your life looks like if we don't all take masking and social hygiene seriously. And he's not a radical guy. I mean, he's not one of these left-wingers that says shut everything down and mask if you're outside in the middle of a 40-acre field by any stretch of the imagination. Excellent, excellent. Probably the most wisdom I've heard from anyone in the COVID-19 experience. So stay tuned for more of that from Ken Remy. Let's take a phone call. Is Linda still on the line? Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, Randy.
Howdy.
D3 is also very good for preventing the virus, but...
Yeah, I tell folks, and I'm taking vitamin D3, and I'm taking a little zinc as well. I see no harm in it for almost everyone. I don't know why that would be contraindicated here for a while. But
yeah, they say a lot of people are very deficient in vitamin D3.
Probably 50% of the population, yeah.
Yeah. No, I was wondering regarding the elections and the different states. I don't know where someone would find the amount of registered voters vote versus how many people actually voted. I wanted to see that by county, but it sounds like it was just a free-for-all. I don't know if people can go out there. I don't know where you find that information. I guess somebody that works with the Board of Elections may know, because I think that would be very telling.
You're right. I know that Giuliani in his press conference last week was touting the fact that in some jurisdictions there had been, 200% of the voters compared to the registered voters. You know, there'd been 200 ballots cast, and that's in a precinct here or there. So I don't know of a comprehensive compendium of that. I'm not aware of that. Maybe we can find that out and post it on the Facebook page, but we'll try to get that and do a little more research on where that's available. Thanks for the call. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, you too. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. And there's no doubt that we're going to find, and I hope that they do percolate through the courts and get the evidence out that the Trump legal team has said they have. I think they've distanced themselves from Sidney Powell, who's made some pretty broad and sweeping allegations. But I think there are going to be significant instances that point to systematic problems with the process that many states and precincts use this election season. I hope that those get reversed. I hope that the authorities are clear-minded and sensible, because while it may have worked to the Democrat advantage this time, hey, it could work the other way, and they should realize that as well. Sort of like that nuclear option that old Harry Reid invoked, you know? That came back to bite him, didn't it? Hey, that'll wrap it up. Boy, the time flew by. Thanks, Carl. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Shaylin. And thank you, Tricia, for all the help this morning. Thank you most of all for listening this and every day on the Mark Cox Morning Show, everyone. Have a safe, healthy, and happy Thanksgiving. Remember that there is goodness to be found. Don't live in the darkness. We'll see you Friday on Annie.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.